What's up, citizens of Apologia? This is King Ginger, and I just wanted to take a moment to encourage you all to sign up for Apologia All Access. When you sign up for Apologia All Access, you're going to get exclusive on-demand content. This means that you and your entire family are going to get to watch every single TV show, every single after show, and every single Apologia Academy, with new content dropping every single week. But most importantly, your contribution helps Apologia Studios create quality, Christ-centered entertainment that reaches millions of people on our YouTube channels and through our podcast with the gospel. So what are you waiting for? Change everything at ApologiaRadio.com.
Non-rockabotus must stop. I don't want to rock the boat. I want to sink it.
Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
Brett, delusional
is okay in your worldview. I'm an animal. You don't chastise chickens for being delusional. You don't chastise pigs for being delusional. So you calling me delusional using your worldview is perfectly okay. It doesn't really hurt.
She hung up on me.
Yes!
What?
Desperate times call for faithful men and not for careful men. The careful men come later and write the biographies of the faithful men, lauding them for their courage.
Go into all the world and make disciples. Not go into the world and make buddies. Not to make brosives.
Right.
Don't go into the world and make homies.
Right.
Disciples.
I got a bit of a jiggle neck. That's a joke, Pastor.
When we have the real message of truth, we cannot let somebody say they're speaking truth when they're not.
Take an amazing journey to a place that will blow your mind and move your heart so you will never be the same again.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Apologia Radio. This is the gospel heard around the world. Back again for another exciting episode today in the writer's room while the set for the new show next week actually gets finished up here. We have a special guest in the studio today, and I'm going to make the introductions in just a minute here. So if you guys are listening to us for the first time, you guys can go to apologiaradio.com, APOLOGIA radio.com. That's where you go to get all the past episodes, the programs. There's over 200 of them with a lot of different amazing guests and great commentary, a whole spectrum of issues from eschatology to apologetics and theology, talking about science and amazing stuff, all kinds of great things. So you guys go there, pick those up, share some with somebody you love, and don't forget you can sign up for All Access, guys, at apologiaradio.com. Get all the television shows, the after shows, and Apologia Academy. I'm going to tell you what today's show is about, and then I'm going to introduce our studio, our hosts, and our special guest. So here's what happened today. Sean Spicer.
7 p.m. local time in Afghanistan last night. The United States military used a GBU-43 weapon in Afghanistan. The GBU-43 is a large, powerful, and accurately delivered weapon. We targeted a system of tunnels and caves that ISIS fighters used to move around freely, making it easier for them to target U.S. military advisors and Afghan forces in the area. The United States takes the fight against ISIS very seriously, and in order to defeat the group, we must deny them operational space, which we did. The United States took all precautions necessary to prevent civilian casualties and collateral damage as a result of the operation. Any further details, I would refer you to the Department of Defense on that.
That was Sean Spicer, special press briefing at the White House, and lots of really very, very concerning things happening all around the world. The United States dropped...
Are you saying there's wars and rumors of wars?
Oh, no. If you want to know about that, you need to go back into past history. That's got nothing to do with this. That's done and gone, y'all. Not that there won't be any more wars and rumors of wars, but that has a special significant meaning and purpose as a prophecy. But we have we sent over 59 missiles to Syria, to a Syrian Air Force base just recently, like within the last week. And we sent a strike force over to North Korea this past week. And we just dropped Moab, the mother of all bombs, the 30-foot bomb. A 30-foot bomb has to be dropped out of the back of a very big airplane, 21,000 pounds, 21,000 pounds. It actually explodes about 6 feet off the ground. Its blast radius is about 1 mile, and it vaporizes anything within a mile of its being dropped. And so it's a pretty significant thing. And actually, it is the most powerful weapon in our arsenal that is not nuclear. And so the next step up is a nuclear bomb. And so it's the mother of all bombs. And we dropped it in Afghanistan. From what I understand, the reports are saying that it was as a result of a Green Beret recently killed in Afghanistan. And so our president ordered and directed the mother of all bombs be dropped. And so we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about just war theory. Just war theory.
That's when, all? Just?
Yeah, just that. No, it's whether or not a war is just. And so to do that, we're actually going to spend time reviewing a radio show discussion that Dr. Greg Bahnsen had on this specific point, just war theory. And in his context, he was talking about Saddam Hussein and the war that started around the area of Kuwait. I remember that vividly because my father was in the military at the time. I was living in Japan, and our entire base was on full alert when that took place. And so very, very vivid memories of that whole entire ordeal. And so we're going to review the context and the statements made by Dr. Greg Bahnsen over just war theory, biblical just war theory. But before we do that, we have a few things we're going to do, some fun things to get into a very serious show today. And so I'm going to introduce who's in the studio. We have Luke the Bear Pearson.
What up?
Joy the Girl.
Hello.
Of course, Marcus King Ginger Pittman's on the ones and twos.
Hello.
In the control room, while we can't even see his face, we're over in the writer's room right now. We also have in the studio Zach Conover, the Director of Communications.
Hey, guys.
At endabortionnow.com. Almost got hit in the face with the microphone there. And our very special guest here to help build the set and spend time with us is Ivy Connerly.
Shalom.
Shalom. All right. So, yeah, let's do this. So let's get into this discussion. Let's do this first. I have some fun stuff I want to do today, guys. Again, very serious subject today. But this was interesting. And help me out, Joy. I always get confused on it. Is it Louis C.K. or is it Louis C.K.?
Louis.
It's Louis C.K. So two comedy shows were recently dropped on Netflix. If you guys have a Netflix subscription, you've probably seen these pop up. Louis C.K. has his new comedy show just popped up, and Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle just dropped two comedy shows. I'm not giving an endorsement for the comedy shows. I'm just telling you they've dropped. And in both of the shows, there is there are interesting moments in both comedy show specials. One with Dave Chappelle, where he talks about Planned Parenthood, and he talks about us living in the age of spin, and he talks about, you know, who knew that Planned Parenthood is for abortion because it's the age of spin. Mm. And he actually says, are you pro-choice or are you anti-consequences? So, Dave Chappelle going at it. I mean, it's kind of interesting. And then in Louis C.K., his new one that just dropped, there it is a very compelling moment at the very beginning of the show. The show starts, he says thank you, and he says, like, so abortion. I mean, it's kind of funny. He starts off his comedy show with, like, right. Hey, let's talk about abortion.
Right.
So very brave. Joy, let's talk about that for a second. He opens up the show, and he just goes right into the abortion joke. But it's really amazing because what happens in this joke that makes it so interesting?
Well, here, let me just pull up my notes from when we did this on Sheologians and Coffee Cats.
We're bottom feeders.
Okay.
Great.
We got to start making sure we cut our shows before there so they're not getting all the good content.
That would take planning.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see if I put that on the schedule.
Put it in Asana. We're like, no show this week, guys. We're just going to hang out.
Right. Sorry. Okay, so your question was
why was this interesting? He opens up with and saying, okay, "Hey, let's talk about abortion."
Well, so it's the very first thing he talks about.
Yes,
he walks onto the stage and thanks everyone for being there, and then he goes, "So abortion."
Yes.
So I mean, it's just it inherently is meant to have some shock value to it.
Yes,
and I don't like all of Louis C.K.'s comedy, but I do like some of it. So the reason we discovered it is because I did intentionally go listen to his comedy special.
Yeah.
You guys can all be mad at me or whatever you want to do.
I'm so angry.
but so I almost turned it off just a few seconds in because how he opens this joke is, it's horrifying.
Yes.
And so I almost didn't even make it past his initial commentary on abortion. But if you continue to listen, you'll just, I think maybe just confused is the best way.
Yes.
To put it, because he's totally wrong, but he's also
exposing stuff.
Right. He exposes what abortion is. And then he also says that if you think that killing a baby is, abortion is killing a baby, you should be holding a sign somewhere
outside.
And he says, for those of you that hate abortion protesters, like, what do you think they should do? Just be like, oh, I don't really want to be mean about it.
Right.
Though.
Right.
So he just says a lot of, I mean, he's all across the board consistent with his position. Of course he's wrong, because he does think that abortion is killing a baby, but he also thinks that women should be able to kill.
But see, here's the thing. Does he really think that you should be able to kill a baby, because he uses it as a form of mockery get them to celebrate it?
I don't think he does. I think he was making fun of the audience.
Yeah, I think he was going after the audience there.
Well, but so if you listen to his reasons why he thinks women should be able to kill. I mean, he's a known liberal. I would absolutely believe that he thinks women should have the choice to. I mean, if he is pro-life, he is not made any other indications ever in any of his comedy or interviews that would indicate that he is pro-life.
There's so much going on in this short little clip.
Right.
That it gets
confusion.
Confusing.
Yeah. Like your amazement. Is that better? Like dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Is that a good word?
Yeah.
Like you'll just pretty much sit there with your mouth hanging open and wondering like what's happening? Like what what's his agenda here? Like,
I think he's baiting the audience in the beginning.
I mean, he is. He's definitely, and it's that's why you get that sort of.
And everyone's like, yeah, that's great. And then when he flips it to, well, it's either, I mean, are we going to play the clip?
We're going to play the clip, yes.
Okay, well, let's just play the clip, because that makes more sense.
Yeah, okay, so just before I play the clip, I want to warn everybody. This is Louis C.K., and he has some pretty graphic language and all that stuff. So if there are little ears around, I can guarantee you don't want them to hear this for sure. So pause it, go into your bathroom and listen to it, whatever you got to do to make sure little ears don't grab hold of this, because it's pretty intense. And so
but you need to hear what he says.
You need to hear what he says.
You have to hear the words, because that's important.
Yeah, and so and the way that he describes it is very, very graphic, but I think he's playing with the audience personally. I think he's exposing them, and or at least he has to finally grant, yeah, that's what it is, and he's putting it on the table. And so
I think when he says that abortion is murdering a child, but I think women should be able to do that, I think he's telling the truth.
Yes.
I think what he's tired of hearing is that it's not killing,
A child. Yeah.
That's where he's prodding
that's right.
at the audience.
Yeah. So it's fascinating. Here's the thing. No matter what, as bad as some of his jokes are and all the rest, I understand that. I get it. I'm with you on that. This is some really good commentary. Very good commentary. So here we go. Here's the clip. Louis C.K. It's on Netflix. And this is as the show opens.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. So, you know, I think abortion is, Here's what I think. I think you should not get an abortion unless you need one. In which case, you better get one. I mean, seriously. If you need an abortion, you better get one. Don't fuck around. And hurry. That's not getting an abortion that you need is like not taking a shit. That's how bad that is. It's like not taking a shit. That's what I think. I think abortion is exactly like taking a shit. I think it is 100% the exact same thing as taking a shit. Or it isn't. Or it is or it isn't. It's either taking a shit or it's killing a baby. It's only one of those two things. It's no other things. So if you didn't like hearing that it's like taking a shit, you think it's killing a baby. That's the only other one you get to have. Which means you should be holding a sign in front of the place. People hate abortion protesters. They're so shrill and awful. They think babies are being murdered. What are they supposed to be like? I don't know, it's not cool. I don't want to be a dick about it, though. I don't want to ruin their day as they murder several babies all the time. I don't think it's killing a baby. I don't. I mean, it is. It's a little bit killing a baby. It's a little bit. It's 100% killing a baby. It is. It's totally killing a whole baby. But I think that women should be allowed to kill babies. That's what I think. They should be allowed to kill babies. Yeah.
Woo! We get to kill babies! Do some shots and kill some babies.
I killed like 4 babies last night. It was fucking retarded. I just think it has to be one or the other. You know, like when people say abortion should be legal, safe, and rare. Why rare if it should be legal? If it should be legal, it's shitting. If it should be rare, it's murdering babies. But again, women should be allowed because 2 reasons I think women should be allowed to kill babies. Number 1, I don't think life is that important. It's just not.
See?
Wow.
That's why I think he's totally playing with the audience.
Absolutely.
Right. But when they start laughing hysterically about killing babies, that's when he's like, right. Do you guys realize how...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's like,
you're
gotcha.
Just, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's funny about that?
Is that the first time you heard it?
No, I've heard it.
Okay, you heard
it. I just can't get over the laughing. It's like,
right.
What point, if any of this, is funny?
I love how he mocks them when they start laughing.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought that was really powerful commentary.
Mm. That's brilliant satire.
That's what, yeah, exactly. Right. I thought that was a...
Because at the end of the day, you really don't know where he stands, but you kind of know the point he was making.
Right. He definitely was making a point. And comedy specials are always a little bit weird. Comedy shows are always a little bit weird. People go into them wanting to laugh, so I think that's why you get a part of why you get that laughter.
Right.
There's usually a 2-drink minimum. That's part of why you get that laughter.
Yes.
But I think he definitely wanted to troll his audience when they started laughing about...
Well, as soon as he comes out, he's like, hey, thanks, so abortion, and laugh. And it's like, all these symbols... Mm-hmm. Like,
well, and the way they're filmed is usually they'll stop and they'll film and they'll redo it. Because, you know, it's their special. It's a representation of something they are putting on Netflix. So it's not usually filmed one shot all the way through. So it's hard to say exactly why the audience is laughing, but they shouldn't be.
Right.
Because what he's saying is horrifying, and then he makes fun of them for laughing at it. And they should stop. I mean, I do think you hear a difference in the amount of laughter getting near the end there. But
ultimately, I think that it's moments like that that are very helpful for the fight. Because whatever he's trying to do, whatever his position is, he just, as a famous comedian and a really popular comedy special, he just took down the laugh's major talking point.
Right.
Where it's safe, legal, and rare.
Right.
And he took it down, right? And if legal, then it's like, it is like using the bathroom.
Right.
But if rare, then it's killing a baby.
Right.
Why do you want it to be rare? Why does it have to be rare if it's just like no big deal? And that's what we say. We actually deal with that argument, safe, legal, and rare. That's exactly what we say. Look, I mean, you don't talk like that about wart removal.
Right.
Right.
Right. Like, I want it to be legal and rare. Well, what? Why? Rare? I mean, legal, yes. Safe, of course, please. But rare? Why rare? Why does it have to be rare? Because it's murdering a baby. That's right. So I thought that was very powerful. I did want to talk about it on our show because we have a lot of listeners that I think this could be very helpful for. And I think that it's good to have conversations about those types of things, even though, granted, Louis C.K., you know, has some vile content and some comedy stuff that as Christians we'd say, and I'm not on board with that at all.
Right.
That's good commentary and important in the midst of this fight because, look, you know, whether you like Louis C.K. or not, that was very helpful. You know, he may have got a lot of people thinking about what? This is murder.
Right.
I mean, that's where you put it. Like, you're murdering babies. Right. They use the terminology that many Christians are afraid to use. I mean, honestly, think about the pro-life movement. Right. Some of the major advocates in the pro-life movement, people that are fighting in the legislature, they don't want to use that terminology. I was on the phone last year with a very, very well-known lobbyist, quote-unquote Christian lobbyist, who's involved in pro-life stuff, and she told me directly she will not call it murder. She won't call it murder. She says she knows too many sisters in Christ that have done it. And she can't see them as mm-hmm. murderers. And so here's Louis C.K.
Well, and he made fun of that too.
Yeah, that's right. Here's Louis C.K. using a word that many Christians are afraid to use about abortion. Mm-hmm. So this is ultimately helpful. I thought it was powerful. So what we're going to do right now, guys, is take a break. We're going to come back, do one more fun thing, and get into an extended discussion.
I was going to say, you said we were going to have a fun segment. There's nothing fun about that.
No. There is something fun coming next.
Heavy.
And you're not allowed to look at my screen, okay? We're going to have a nostalgic moment.
And some water.
It's going to be fun. And we're going to do it. And you guys, you, listening to the show, you get to kind of play along as we're doing it. And hopefully for some of you guys that were raised in the 80s, this will be a kind of cool moment for you. So we're going to be right back. ApologiaRadio.com is where you guys get us. Thank you guys for partnering with us on All Access. If you haven't seen it yet, I'd encourage you to go to Apologia Studios on YouTube. A recent clip just got loaded up there with Ivy and myself outside of the Mormon Temple in Mesa this week, talking to a Mormon fellow that we've known for over 10 years. He comes out to actually try to stop us. I've known him for a long time. His name is Stefan, and we got a really unique moment to talk about something we don't often talk about outside the Mormon Temple, and that is about the Mormon Church and black people. What was Brigham Young's position on black people? And it was awful. And
Real talk.
And so we do it, and I don't know if we'll have time to play that. We'll play it sometime. But go look at it, guys. Be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, beauties and beasts, I have some good news for you. But in order for me to tell you the good news, I must share with you the bad. A beard can be a most magnificent thing, but it can also be the downfall of a man. An unmaintained beard prevents a face from shining. An unmaintained beard causes dry, itchy skin. An unmaintained beard is a source of beard drift. You know, like dandruff, but beard drift. An unmaintained beard is sharp and ruthless, like iron bristles. Not good for the lady friend. An unmaintained beard forfeits future growth based on a lack of preparation today. And let's not forget that an unmaintained beard robs your face from smelling amazing. Let not thy beard be thy downfall. Protect your manlyhood. An epic combination of manliness and manhood. If you're hearing this today, there is hope for your beard. Go to ucosbeard.com and enter the code APOLOGIA and you can save some money while you save your face.
This is Cy Timbrunke with Answer Anyone Apologetics. In California in the 1950s, car ownerships were printed on pink paper. Racing for Pinks was a drag race in which the loser of the race would forfeit ownership of his car to the winner. Now imagine you were going to have a race for Pinks. The first thing you'd want to do is make sure your opponent actually owns the car that he's driving. Let's say you produced your pink slip and asked your opponent to do the same, but he just revved his engine and yelled, "Come on, let's race, what are you afraid of?" Now you might be confident that you'd win that race, but you'd be crazy to race him if he couldn't prove that the car was his. Even crazier if you knew that he'd stolen it. As Christians, we're commanded to engage people with the defense of our faith. Our opponents will come at us with logical, scientific, and moral objections to the existence of God. But who owns logic? Who owns science? Who owns morality? Jesus Christ. In Romans 11:36, we read that from God, through God, and to God are all things. When the unbeliever attempts to engage you, they're doing so with stolen goods, and we let them. Jesus Christ has equipped us with tools for reasoning. Don't let the unbeliever steal them when they want to engage you. Make them account for them. Make them show you their pink slip. For more apologetic answers, visit answeranyone.com.
All right, guys, we're back. I guess we're already going.
Come on, Ivy.
So,
we started?
We're started. We're in.
Awesome.
I was trying to get Ivy to bring us back in, and he's too good.
He's a sucker MC.
He's a sucker MC.
Oh, yeah. We just had lunch, and in the words of Vody Bakum, that dog don't hunt.
Can you at least do some Vody for me? This is a fun segment. Do some Vody. Come on.
Some bad Vody.
Man. Oh, my goodness, Ivy. Dude. You
know what I'm saying? I gotta be in the mode, bro.
I feel like I'm at your show right now. You get on the stage and you choke.
Oh, no.
Oh, dang.
Sorry, dang. I had to just plug in there. I was turned off.
I'm trying to make him mad so he'll do something.
Okay, so let's do something kind of fun. All right, so I was born in 1978. My kids think I'm older than dirt.
Well.
But I was raised in the 80s. It was a glorious time. It was a time where you only had a couple channels. It was only a handful of channels you can get.
Yeah, true.
Of the handful of channels, there was one, MTV, that I was not allowed to watch.
I didn't even have cable.
Officially, I wasn't allowed to watch it. But I used to watch DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Yes, sir.
And my parents would be like, don't be turning on MTV. And I would be like, parents just don't understand. And so you only had like a couple channels. And then like if your show was on, if you missed the show, you missed the show. You got to wait till it comes out on VHS.
You got to wait till it comes out on Netflix 25 years later.
On VHS. You know, when you wanted to watch a movie, you had to pop your VHS cassette tape in. Maybe you can go to Blockbuster.
Beacon Rewind.
And that's right. Make sure you send it back rewound. And
if you were smooth enough, though, you could program your VHS to tape the show.
To tape the show, yeah. That was a discovery made only later
mm-hmm.
by the elite.
Yep.
And this was a time of Pee Wee Herman's Funhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time of Saturday... Playhouse, that's right, Funhouse. It was a time of Saturday morning cartoons. It was a good time. It was a glorious time. It was a time of Care Bears, where you had cartoons, like Chappelle actually talks about this, cartoons from our generation had little animals that just shot love out of their bellies to other people. If there was a problem, they were like, Care Bears stare, and they shot love at each other. Love. People this generation won't even understand that. And so the 80s were great. And so I'm gonna actually play a couple clips. Tell me, let's see who can get it first.
I bet Joy will smoke us all on this, actually.
Let's see who
was only born in the 80s.
Who's going to get it first? And then let's talk about...
I was born in 89, too.
That's what I'm saying, you and Zach.
The end.
I don't know if that technically counts.
You still, like, still counts, because you were in there.
Right, almost. Yeah. Just barely made it.
She'll still smoke us all.
The 80s produced, actually, some of the best music in the history of the world. Some of the best... hip-hop and rap, 80s.
Okay.
Some of the best rock and roll from the 80s.
Oh.
Some of the greatest stars from the 80s. Hmm. Like, I mean, you think about, like, some of the big ones that just, like, were, like, larger than life. You know, Michael Jackson, whatever you think. He's dead now. But, yeah, movie stars, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, these action heroes. Like, you know, that's all 80s stuff. No one will ever understand. Some of the great classics came from the 80s. Classics, like, we don't have that many modern classics. I mean, they're there, but like the 80s is just,
they're all being remade.
That's right.
Now.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone's going back to the 80s to say, well, what do they do well, and see if we can do it like them or better. And they usually blow it up. But here we go.
I think doesn't every generation say that though? Like, my parents watch old black and white movies, and they're like, they don't make them like this anymore.
Yeah. They're,
I don't know. There's something about
the
80s.
I think everyone... See, they wouldn't say that.
But see, Star Wars. Like, Star Wars obviously came out in the 70s, but it blew up. And then throughout the 80s, it was the Star Wars decade. Right? No?
I'm
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm just saying this all sounds a little subjective. But
I'm
go
just
on.
Saying I love the 80s. You know what it is? I see why. I see why you're maybe like you're skeptical about it is because you were born in 1989. You didn't get to experience from 81 to 89. Had you done so, you would be on my side of this argument right now.
All I know is this discussion
that.
Is
that also seems very subjective.
This discussion is only had by people that are old. So I think when you get to a certain
right, that's what
age,
I'm saying.
Yeah.
When you get to a certain age, you're like,
right, old.
No one can, no
old
one can
age.
Do it as well as my generation yeah. did.
Wait a minute.
So when you're old, right. when you're old, then you challenge.
I think everyone at this table right now is in their 30s, right?
No,
you're not in your 30s. 27.
28.
28. Well, you're getting there.
Thank you.
You're 36.
Yes, sir.
36.
35.
He just had a birthday.
Birthday? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
My birthday. All right. All right. All right. So I'm the oldest person in this room?
By far and away.
By far and away? Okay. Here we go. Let's get to it. All right. So let's. You tell me. Don't look at my screen.
I'm
y'all?
Not.
Okay.
Also, your I'm, son's at the table. You know he's not in his 30s,
I know that.
Right?
I meant because I mean I meant on the microphones basically. All right, here we go. So let's see who can tell me first the movie, and then we'll talk about it. Okay, here we go. I might play a little bit of it too.
Wait,
so
is it just like a clip from the movie?
It's a clip from the movie.
Okay.
Okay, these are classic scenes from 80s movies.
Hey, Miles, what year was that map made?
Oh, I don't know. Probably a couple hundred years before.
Oh, wow.
President Lincoln.
Goonies.
Very good.
Yep.
Very good, but let's let it play out.
George Washington. Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen?
That's President Kennedy, you idiot!
Was that a difference? I mean, he played Kennedy once.
Oh, that's really smart. I'm glad to know you're using your brain.
Yeah, well, at least I have a brain.
So stupid, Mouth.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Shut up! Wait a minute. This isn't gold. This is a wishing well. Look.
Hey, you guys, look. It must be the old Moss Garden wishing well.
You know, I always used to believe that when you threw your money in, it turned into your wish.
You take no coins. And I'll take 2 coins. And
no, that's not fair.
Wait. Stop. You can't do this.
Why?
Why? Because these are somebody else's wishes. They're somebody else's dreams.
Yeah. But you know what? This one. This one right here. This was my dream, my wish. And it didn't come true. So I'm taking it back. I'm taking them all back.
Classic 80s film, Goonies. You had Corey Feldman right there mm-hmm. as a child. Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. I wanted to be Corey Haim when I was a kid. I wasn't a Christian. But I wanted to be Corey Haim. Who actually, in the last decade, he died of a drug overdose, right?
I have not seen that movie.
Oh, Marcus.
Oh, wow.
Marcus,
are you serious?
Yeah,
what the
I've
heck
not
just
seen
happened?
It.
You haven't seen
it.
Goonies?
No.
Marcus, that's what you have to do tonight. You have to get Goonies. You have to Goonies. Think, you have to go watch it.
I think okay. I have something for you. Hold on.
I do think that's a shame.
Did Marcus have
seen
Goonies?
It. Yeah.
Well, so.
Nope. Sorry. Wrong one.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay. So the thing that came out of the 80s is what movies were there where there were children and they were on a path and they were in danger or it was like this group of kids.
Oh, Stranger Things.
So well no, the Stranger Things but that's the thing, Stranger Things is biting off of the back of what the 80s produced is the children in
well,
a difficult situation.
The 80s was known for its coming of age stories where like a gang of kids would have an adventure
True.
And Ferris they
Bueller.
Would all grow up
no, it's not quite the same thing
and like flourish through the story.
Sure.
That's right.
My favorite one was It.
That's what I was just going to say. now think about it, right? They're remaking It, which is a terrifying movie, right?
Right.
I couldn't sleep for like weeks after watching it in the 80s. My mom let me watch it when I was like not appropriate age, 8 years old or something like that.
I still don't like clowns.
Yeah, because of It?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But like, look, you got Stranger Things, the kids in
right.
a difficult situation. Now It, the remake. But see, what are they remaking? A movie from the 80s.
Right.
Do you see? This is the best decade of the last 100 years.
Hold on.
Okay.
That's what I was
saying. Okay, next one. Are you ready? Another 80s classic. Classic 80s. Okay, who gets it first? That's the question. Here we go. Ready?
So far, I'm winning.
Okay, actually, yeah, here we go. Ready?
Top Gun.
I was going to say it.
Nope.
Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
Terminator.
Yes. Terminator.
Wow.
This is the classic scene where Arnold Schwarzenegger just appears and walks into the bar, and he's wearing his birthday suit. And, man, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, he had some guns. He did. What's that film that came out of the 80s? Was it the 80s? No, it was the 70s. What was it? Was it Pumping Iron? It was Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was a documentary about Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, where he was, like, Mr. Universe. Did you ever see it?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
You gotta see it. Man, that guy. Like, his just muscles. Like, I saw an actual documentary recently about how bodybuilding has changed, and they showed, like, the bodybuilding world champions from, like, 1920 compared to today. I mean, honestly, the guy that won 1920, I think, give me 6 months and I'll beat him. That's about what it looked like. And you look at guys that, like, from, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I was like, whoa, what happened? How'd you do that?
It's called anabolic steroids.
Do you think that it's all... Oh, hold on now. Hold on. I know there's steroids. I understand this. And they call it, in the UK, they call it gear. All right, I know guys are taking gear, using gear, right? But do you think that it is all, like, really the gear, or that it actually is that we've learned, like, through
technology
to actually develop? Do you think, like, it's like, what do you think the, like, ratio, like, what do you think it is? Do you think it's like 90% it's the steroids, or do you think it actually is, like,
yeah, I mean, like, if you take steroids, you still got to work out.
We
didn't have any equipment, none of the stuff we got now, so
yeah, it's still a regimen.
Yeah, I think so. But man, he was huge. All right, now here we go. This is another classic. Stop looking at my screen.
I'm not.
Okay. Here we go. Ready? I'm gonna push play. You guys see who gets it first.
E.T.
I mean, some dialogue would help.
It's coming.
It's hard to tell from just rustling.
That movie where they wrestle around a lot.
Hey, that was what... That's a scene is classic, and the rustling around is the funny part.
I'd switch pillows with you, but I'm allergic to sponge. I got a bad allergy to it. I'd be sneezing all night with that thing.
Oh,
Planes,
Trains, and Automobiles.
For the record, I said it first.
I know, but...
We thought it at the same time.
We did.
I just said it faster.
This is the funny scene where...
I had no idea those beer cans were going to blow like that.
He puts his beer cans on the vibrating bed, and they exploded.
It's been a long day. It just didn't occur to me. Didn't occur to you, so I have to sleep in a puddle of beer. You want to switch?
No, I just want to sleep.
Me too. I am bushed.
Good night.
Good night.
This is one of the saddest scenes, though. Like, I'm going to get to this part.
Stories.
Here. This part.
It's hard to visualize that.
This, right. This here you go, right?
Blow your brains out. You'll thank me for it. I could tolerate any insurance seminar. For days, I could sit there and listen to them go on and on with a big smile on my face. And I'd say, how can you stand it? And I'd say, because I've been with Del Griffith. I can take anything. And you know what they'd say? They'd say, I know what you mean. The shower curtain ring guy. Whoa. It's like going on a date with a chatty Kathy doll. I expect you have a little string on your chest, you know, that I pull out and have to snap back. Except I wouldn't pull it out and snap it back. You would. And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
You want to hurt me? Go right ahead of it.
Saddest moment in the 80s right here.
I'm an easy target.
All these claims
in this
show.
Saddest moment in the 80s.
A lot of downtime in this thing.
I need you to listen. Listen.
Yeah, you're right. I talk too much. I also listen too much.
You hear the music coming in?
Uh-huh.
You hear that?
I heard it.
Synthesizer?
I could be a cold-hearted cynic like you. but I don't like to hurt people's feelings. Well, you think what you want about me. I'm not changing. I like me. My wife likes me. My customers like me. Because I'm the real article. What you see is what you get.
Right?
I have not seen this movie.
Perfect use.
So none of this makes sense to me.
Are you
at
serious?
All.
That yeah, Mark, none this of whole that, segment is
this whole
just
segment is just playing a clip.
Hey,
that I have no
I know
context
there
for.
Are a lot of listeners that appreciate this, and they're going to appreciate this one even more. And let's see if you guys.
They're going to appreciate it even more when they can actually watch it.
Yeah. No, no.
Not listen to it on a radio
more,
show.
Hey, hey, this is the point. I specially selected the clips to make it difficult to figure out.
Right.
But I'm putting the best parts of the movie in. Here
we
go. Ready?
Well, I'll let you have your segment.
Thank you. Okay, here we go. Here we go.
I'm Anita Horgarth.
Buck melanoma. Molly Russell's wart.
Princess Diaries.
No. Princess Diaries?
No, 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 I mean, no, wait, I mean, no.
Ghostbusters.
Let me.
No. Not the Princess Diaries, the Mel Brooks film.
No, you're thinking of Princess Bride, and it's not that either.
No, here we go. Ready? Okay, everyone, stop looking at my screen. Here we go.
Wart. I'm the wart. She's my tumor, my growth, my pimple. I'm Uncle Wart. Just old
Uncle
Buck Wart.
Uncle Buck!
That's what I thought.
Or, melanoma.
I thought it was. I was waiting to see.
Melanoma head's coming.
It's the famous scene where he goes into the principal's office and she has a massive mole on her face and he keeps saying, wart, melanoma, she's my growth. She's my pimple. She's my... He can't get it out. And this is the epic moment where he takes her down, I think, right? Where is it? Where is he if it's in here? Yeah. No. 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 He tells her to... He says to... He gives her a quarter. And he says, here's 25 cents. Go pay a rat to chew that thing off your face.
Uncle Buck is a great movie.
It is a great movie.
Is that Chevy Chase?
No,
oh,
that was
my
John.
Gosh, Mark. Can somebody just mute him already?
The Princess Diaries.
Marcus.
He said, is that Chevy
Marcus,
Chase?
Marcus, we're going to have a day.
Oh, my goodness.
We're
going
to live. Hey, remember what? What's his name? How do you say it? Is it Shia or Shia? Shia.
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia.
Shia. You know the day where he filmed himself watching all of his own movies?
Right.
Right.
What kind of narcissistic thing was that? But we'll have a day where we actually film you watching all these 80s classics.
Okay.
Because you need to. All right, here we go. Ready? Now this one, I will be ashamed. I will be ashamed if you have not seen this movie.
I want a giant pancake now.
What he wanted was revenge. And right before he was introduced, he'd gotten ready for it.
The Sandlot.
Principal John Wiggins.
Someone's drinking.
And our celebrity contestant from KLAM in Portland, the boss man himself, Bob Cornell.
I'm letting it go.
No, he already said Sandlot. So.
Someone's drinking an egg right now.
KLAM in Portland.
UHF.
Diving into the fifth pie, Lardass began to imagine that he wasn't eating pies. He pretended he was eating cow flops and rat guts and blueberry sauce.
Oh no!
A sound started to build in Lardass' stomach. A strange and scary sound, like a log truck coming at you at 100 miles an hour.
I can't believe nobody's gotten
suddenly,
this yet.
Lardass opened his mouth. And before Bill Travis knew it, he was covered with five pies worth of used blueberries.
No?
Mm-hmm. Nobody.
Stand by me.
Stand by me.
That's a story they're telling about.
Right. That's another coming of age story.
Yeah. Yes. It's all the kids. And there's a guy that died and the guys are after him. And oh, man, that absolutely is. Yes. Yes. Powerful. It is a very, if you haven't seen Stand By Me, you got to see Stand By Me. That was Spielberg, right? Spielberg made Stand By Me, right? I think so.
I believe so.
Yeah, if you haven't
seen
it.
Oh, is that the one that Randy said I should watch and he let me borrow it and I started to watch with my kids and there was like an F word every 2 minutes?
Well, yeah, that's how kids' movies were back in the 80s.
That's the one, yeah. I got about an hour or half an hour into it with Evie, and I was like, yeah, we'll have to watch this later.
That gets me to the point of the last clip. How in the 80s, the kids' movies were filled with a lot of curse words, and this is the part where I think you'll appreciate this, Joy, 80s movies were actually very dark, the cartoons and movies, very dark and very scary. Right? Very dark and very scary.
Like Stranger Things.
Like Stranger Things. Okay, think about it. What can you think of from the 80s that was like a kid's movie, or was at least marketed towards children, that was dark? Like, very dark, very scary.
Like, a lot of the
Never-ending story.
E.T. Right.
Yeah.
Gremlins.
Right.
Curse words. Right. It's a Christmas film. Curse words. And then, like some seriously violent things happening. People under the stairs. Right. Right, the Dark Crystal? Was it Dark Crystal?
Yeah, that's immediately what I thought of.
Oh, very, very, very dark, very, very scary.
The Dark Crystal. Labyrinth.
Labyrinth? Right. Yeah, see? Okay, now here's one. Saddest moment in the history of the 80s.
I thought that was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, you already played
that.
Are we going
to listen to it again?
No. The way that we're going to do this, is as I feel the emotions, I will experience them live. So for the moment, this is the saddest moment of any 80s film.
Well, more sad than the other one, or is this second?
Yeah, okay, you want to guess it already? I haven't pushed play yet.
Yeah,
you
I
want to
guess it already. For me, it was
My
Girl.
Story time or?
My Girl.
Oh. My Girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Was that 80s or was that 90s? Was that 80s?
I think that was 80s.
I think that
right?
You're right. Yeah, yeah, it was like 89.
Like late 80s.
Yeah. Oh, man, My Girl, that was sad. Yeah. Now, what do you think was more sad? Up, which
I
or
no,
My
worst
Girl?
Worst movie of all time.
Stop 91. It.
Up
okay.
Is
My
the
Girl.
Most, I don't mean
so
worst movie. I mean most depressing movie.
My Girl.
Okay. My Girl. It's in there. So that would make this one. Okay, here we go. Ready? All right. See if you get it.
Everyone knew that whoever let the sadness overtake him would sink into the swamp.
Stranger Things.
Nope. No, I'm giving you a little bit.
I was kidding.
Come on, Artex.
Really mean
it's
that.
Right there, guys.
Wait.
Oh, so sad.
What's the matter?
What's the matter?
What's wrong?
Artex.
Come on, boy.
Artex, I'll give you a clue. Artex is a horse.
I understand.
And as this is happening right
Seriously.
Now,
Benji,
Artex is sinking.
It's too difficult for you.
I actually know this movie, but I can't.
Artex!
Artex, you're sinking! Come on, get around! You have to now!
Dang it. I know this movie. I've watched this movie.
I remember watching
many
this,
times.
Bawling my eyes out.
Artex!
Artex,
please. You're letting the sadness of the swamps get to you. You have to try. You have to care.
It's the swamp
for me.
Where the sadness overtakes you when you...
I have no idea.
Is this a Jim Henson movie?
Yes, I think.
Yeah.
It's,
Fraggle Rock.
No.
You gotta move or you'll die. Move, please.
The Dark Crystal.
We already talked about that.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
It takes you back, man. The Never-Ending Story.
I was going to guess that, but he mentioned it earlier.
I mentioned it earlier before you played this.
Yeah.
When you were talking,
I was going to say the Never-Ending Story, but I was like...
When you were asking for the dark movies, I said Never-Ending Story.
That's right. Yeah. Never-Ending Story. That was the scene, Never-Ending Story, where I remember my heart was ripped out of my chest right there. I remember being a kid, like, just face full of tears, man. Man, that movie. And that creature, that flying poodle thing. What the heck is that? With the creepy little bumps on his back. It's like, I don't want to ride that. And riding that. Yeah. You got like all those water blisters
what
on you.
What was his name?
Take care of your water blisters, sucker, and see.
What was his name?
I forget.
There was a Christian punk band or something named after him. I can't think of the name.
What, the flying poodle?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up right now.
Now it's going to drive me nuts because I can't think of it.
Did they even feed that thing the whole movie? I don't remember it eating one time.
That ginormous poodle flying through the sky with a bunch of water blisters on his back. What was that? Or was it on his belly? The water blisters on his belly.
We don't know the rules. Maybe it doesn't have to eat.
I don't know. I don't know. It grossed me out. That's
all
I know.
Oh my gosh, it's going to drive me crazy.
Oh, I know, seriously.
Joey's like, you don't know how the universe works.
You don't know the rules. You can't doubt it if you don't know.
Are you looking it up?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to drive me nutty.
We'll go to break. We come back. You tell us what it is. All right, guys. Be right back, guys. Hope you enjoyed the segment. Hope it brought back a lot of memories. Apologia Radio.
This is the Chocolate Knox. If you love that wonderful sensation of chewing glass, this is the show for you.
Cross Politic is a weekly show and podcast that mixes the taboo formula of faith, culture, and politics, proclaiming the lordship of Christ in every corner of our culture.
Hallelujah.
Gabriel Wrench is a deacon from Texas, and he wears overalls.
One time.
Chocolate Knox, a.k.a. David Shannon, he's a movie maker from Minnesota.
Action!
I'm Toby Sumter, pastor here in Moscow, Idaho, and I used to live in Alaska. Did you know that?
No.
No.
We've interviewed everyone from Alveda King to Ted Cruz to Steve Dace to Walter Williams, and we invite you to join us here at Cross Politic as we learn to fight, laugh, and feast, all to the glory of God. CrossPolitik.com.
For 21 years and counting, New St. Andrews College has sought to obey Christ's great commission to disciple nations and build him a house, not just in Jerusalem, but throughout the world. Not with stones and mortar, but with living stones. We build and fight. This is the task of a Christian liberal arts college, to equip students with the tools to build and fight. And this is our joyful task as we seek to graduate leaders who shape culture through wise and victorious living. To learn more, check us out online at nsa.edu/explore.
So what was the name?
Okay, so first let me say that I was way off on what I was thinking. I was thinking of Atreyu, which is not a Christian punk band. It's a metal band. It's not a Christian band. But Atreyu was actually the character. The dragon was Falcor. Just to clarify.
Falcor was the flying poodle.
The dragon.
Yeah.
That ain't no dragon. That's a poodle. That's a dog face.
Yeah,
ain't no dragon face.
That seems like a very Japanese representation of a dragon, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You got floppy ears like that. Wearing fur.
It was like the water dog plus.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of terrifying.
And you can fly.
Yeah. You don't know if you want to cuddle with it or if you want to hide from it.
But you wouldn't. You seriously, if you were in another world and something was like, hey, jump on my back, I'll fly you around.
Totally would do it.
Right.
Oh, I wouldn't hesitate.
Totally would do it. Even with the water blisters.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, I mean, that's. I wanted to make sure that you, would still go for it.
Yeah, I'd do it. I'd do it for sure.
I mean, it's like, it looks like a poodle and a salamander had a baby together.
You know what? It was the.
Look at it.
It's, you know, it's the sucker MC of dragons.
Sucker MC of dragons?
I mean, dude ain't even got wings. How's he fly?
That's right. It's magical.
Are we really going to get into the universe again?
So.
I'm just saying.
Speaking of flying.
Maybe it's genetic.
Speaking of flying, President Trump flew 59
on a dragon.
Tomahawk missiles. To a Syrian airbase. This is his statement right after he did it. Here we go.
President Trump. On Tuesday, Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad launched a horrible chemical weapons attack on innocent civilians. Using a deadly nerve agent, Assad choked out the lives of helpless men, women, and children. It was a slow and brutal death for so many. Even beautiful babies were cruelly murdered in this very barbaric attack. No child of God should ever suffer such horror. Tonight I ordered a targeted military strike on the airfield in Syria from where the chemical attack was launched. It is in this vital national security interest of the United States to prevent and deter the spread and use of deadly chemical weapons. There can be no dispute that Syria used banned chemical weapons, violated its obligations under the Chemical Weapons Convention, and ignored the urging of the UN Security Council. Years of previous attempts at changing Assad's behavior have all failed, and failed very dramatically. As a result, the refugee crisis continues to deepen, and the region continues to destabilize, threatening the United States and its allies.
Okay, so that was the statement issued really not long after the missile strike on the Syrian Air Force base. So I want to ask the question, what is a just war? How should a nation, if we took God's standards and scripture, actually engage in warfare? Because I want to say first and foremost, up front, we are not pacifists. I don't think that that is ultimately a defensible position in a fallen world. Pacifism, I don't think, can be actually adequately defended in a coherent way in a fallen world. We live in a fallen world. I like what Bonson says in a little bit. You might be able to hear him here talking about pacifism, the ideals of pacifism, wanting peace and those sorts of things are the right ideals. Those are biblical ideals. But we live in a fallen world where there are evil people and there are people who hurt other people and attack other people. And we need to ask the question, what is a just war to engage in? And today, actually, just today, at the recording of this, there was the Moab bomb dropped in Afghanistan in response to an American soldier being killed. And then, of course, I wanted to play this clip as well so you guys can get the full context of the reality that we're sitting in right now. And that is that the United States sent in the last couple of days a strike team, to North Korea, towards North Korea. And so North Korea warned us of a nuclear attack as a result of it.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Brett Baer in Washington. North Korea is warning of a nuclear attack against the United States if provoked. It's not the first time the communist nation has made an extreme threat against this country, but it takes on new added meaning in the context of the North's recent missile and nuclear weapons testing.
And here's another report.
North Korea are once again raising the stress level at the Pentagon. Both nations continue to test ballistic missiles that could threaten American warships and bases. But the real fear is that North Korea is getting closer to having a missile that could reach the United States. The past U.S. presidents have done little to stop them. National security correspondent Jennifer Griffin has the latest from the Pentagon tonight.
The Pentagon says the North Korean launch involved multiple missiles, most of them old Scuds. Four fell within 190 miles of Japan, raising alarm among U.S. allies. But it's North Korea's intent to master long-range missiles that has Washington worried.
So the concern with North Korea at this point is that North Korea has launched missiles that keep splashing down into the sea within like 200 miles of Japan, one of our allies, and actually a place I grew up in Japan. We have military bases in Japan. We have United States soldiers in Japan. And this continues to happen. And of course, Korea, the concern is that Korea is working on ICBM missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles that could be carrying nuclear warheads, able to strike the continental United States. And so that's the concern. And so here's the context we have. Right now, in the last, say, 2 weeks, President Trump has launched an attack against Syria, sent a force towards North Korea, and dropped a Moab bomb on Afghanistan. And so it's good to have these conversations. I think Christians ought to be having these conversations, because if we're not having them, we're not speaking according to scripture with this, then that means that the unbelievers are the ones having the conversations, and then we're just lost in a sea of confusion in terms of just arbitrary standards as to what is just warfare. People talk about statecraft and use all kinds of really important language that basically only lends itself towards a particular group having the conversation, not ultimately Christians. What should we say about this as Christians? You know, here, let me throw some things at you, okay? These are the things that are said. Well, look, we have to actually attack Syria because Syria was involved in a chemical weapons attack that just, that murdered children and women and these sorts of things. And if we really love our neighbor, then we'll do something to stand up for our neighbor. I even saw Proverbs quoted in terms of this conversation. People rescue said, those. Rescue those who are stumbling to the slaughter. People said, well, you have to rescue them. God commands you to.
Right, rescue.
Yeah, is that appropriate to quote in this context where you have nations against nations, where it's not just your neighbor next to you, that sort of a thing, where it's actually an issue of a sovereign nation doing things. If we haven't been attacked or threatened to be attacked by another nation, do we have a justifiable defense for an attack back? If we have not been hurt, it's a great meme I saw the other day. It was the United States, a map of the United States with a teacher standing before from South Park. It said, show me where Syria hurt you.
Show me on the map where Syria.
Show me on the map where Syria hurt you. Like, where did Syria hurt you? And so let's talk about it. And let's just do this in an easy way. Let's actually go and let's listen together to a discussion. It's fantastic. We'll post it here under this podcast so you hear the entire thing. With Dr. Greg Bahnsen on a radio program, the context again of this discussion is Saddam Hussein. The context is the war in Kuwait. Again, in my own mind, very, very vivid memories about this particular battle because my father almost had to go. And so let's get right into it. Tell me when you want to stop, guys, and we'll have this discussion.
Well, is war ever justified? Dr. Greg Bahnsen is here. How shall we describe you, Dr. Bahnsen?
Well, I'm a minister of the gospel, Presbyterian by denomination, and currently scholar in residence at the Southern California Center for Christian Studies, where we do a lot of work in publishing and lecturing and debating.
Okay. Debating on what kinds of things?
Well, we debate the question of God's existence and the truth of the Christian faith. We debate ethical issues, Christians' involvement in the world, socio-political matters. And so both in apologetics and in ethics, we try to defend the Christian worldview and show its advantages and superiority to its alternatives.
If I were to ask you the question just this way, in fact, I'm going to. Well, was the most recent war in the Middle East justified? Was Operation Just Cause indeed a just cause?
Well, obviously, when you ask the question looking for a yes or no answer, and there has to be a yes or no answer because I don't think we live in a world of relativism, but it's going to be subject to misunderstanding if there isn't something by way of a lead-in explanation of what a just war is and then how that would be applied.
Is there such a thing?
I believe there is such a thing as a just war. From the standpoint of biblical revelation, though we know war stems from the sinful desires of men and therefore war is always a spiritual failure for us as human beings, nevertheless, in a fallen world where we have to deal with that sinful nature of man, there are going to be occasions where war is the appropriate response to aggression.
So you're not a pacifist?
Not at all. I think that though the ideals of the pacifist...
Now, this is important here, just as by way of introduction to this entire conversation. I will go ahead and announce ahead of time, I think what happened in Syria recently was actually unjust. I think it was actually a wicked move, and I don't think you could defend that from standard of justice and biblical justice and righteousness at all. However, what people often do is they fall, generally Christians have this problem, we fall in opposite directions. So we go to the far side of each discussion generally. You don't usually have balance. So you have people that typically could be classified as you could say they're warmongers, you know, hey, you know, we're America, we're the superpower, and because we're the superpower in the world, we need to sort of police the world, we need to stamp out injustice wherever it's found, and it's perfectly appropriate for us to find an evil dictator somewhere and to topple him and destroy his country because he's evil, right? Everyone agrees? No, he's evil. Everyone says, yay and amen. Okay, great, let's go drop a bomb. Give him a Moab for dinner. Let's drop it on his nation. And the other side, you have Christians that fall, and they'll say things typically like, well, no, God wants peace, and Christians are about love, and we should love our neighbor, and so we shouldn't be involved in warfare. And what tends to be forgotten on that end of the spectrum is what? We live in a fallen world. Yeah, the ideals of peace are the right ideals. Yes, that's what God wants. Yes, but how we live in a sinful, fallen world where people are evil and they have evil desires and motivations and they hurt one another and they attack. And so, yeah, sometimes war is just. And as a matter of fact, I think sometimes if you don't engage in warfare, it becomes a moral issue. Mm. It's a moral issue for a government not to defend its citizens when they need to be defended. And so in that case, if you have a pacifist ruling the country, not protecting its citizens, that's a moral failing. And so, yes, war can be just.
For correct ideals and the things that we as Christians should be striving for, we will not accomplish that by simply laying down our arms and pretending the world isn't a fallen place with aggressive individuals that will violently take advantage of the innocent.
Saddam Hussein took advantage, I don't know about the innocent, but he took advantage certainly of the Kuwaitis. He's a Hitler-esque figure capable of all kinds of atrocities.
This is important too, because this comes up a lot. People, when you have... And I saw this a lot in social media over the last week when people were saying, hey, guys, can I raise my hand for a second here and object for a moment? Should we have launched 59 missiles at somebody who didn't attack us? Should we have done that? The response even by Christians was, well, the people who were attacked by the chemical weapons in Syria disagree with you. So there's the emotional heartstrings being tugged on often in this discussion. People will say, what about the people who were attacked? They're certainly happy the United States sent missiles over. Okay, well, that's a good discussion to have. Let's think through that. If somebody is an evil dictator, if somebody's attacked, does that mean that we have the right to now spill American mm-hmm. blood and spend American money on that kind of war?
Certainly, you must agree that bringing a tyrannical, lawless individual like him to bay is a noble cause, right?
Well, he's been described as the butcher of Baghdad, and though there's obviously rhetorical force to that, I think there's moral force to it as well. He is a man that deserves to be driven from power and to be brought to justice for his crimes against his own people and other peoples of the world as well.
So I guess
there's
no question about him being
an evil man, and there's no question about it being good that he'd be brought down. The real question is, what is the just and morally appropriate way for that to take place?
All right. I'll bite. What is the just and moral way to bring his regime to an end?
Okay, well, the question, because we asked whether this was a just war, meaning was it just for us as the United States to intervene, the real question is going to become, has God granted to us, the United States of America, the right to police the world? As wrong as Saddam Hussein is, and as ideal as it would be for him to be driven from power, the real question is whether we have been authorized by God to expend the lives and money, property of our citizens in order to accomplish that noble end. And I don't believe that the Bible warrants that kind of thinking for not only the United States, but for any other nation of the world. The problems of the Middle East have got to be taken care of in the Middle East. Our intervention, I'm afraid, betrays something of a messianic complex and way of thinking for us as Americans that, you know, we've got the right answers and therefore we have the right to go anywhere in the world and to impose those answers.
Now, I thought that that was a powerful statement by Dr. Bonson there. It betrays something of a messianic complex.
Mm-hmm.
Take that in just for a moment. When we think about the problems in the world and the evil things that happen in the world, and we think that America has the right to just impose its position in those situations, is that a messianic complex? Is that a righteous understanding of our position in the world, that we have the right to impose ourselves upon a sovereign nation that hasn't attacked us? And again, granted, not ignoring the fact that you have wicked leaders and despots and rulers and regimes that are hurting other people, granting all of that and understanding, yes, those things should be ended. We should work to end those things. But do we have the right to take American blood and money and pour them into these nations every time we see something going wrong. What do you guys think?
No.
Expatiate.
No. Okay. Well, okay. So, I mean, our country, I mean, if we say, yes, our country has the moral right to interfere and say, let's take something that is absolutely evil, like North Korea.
Yes.
I mean, those people are suffering. It's really terrible. And but if we say that we have the right to do that, then what's to take a country like any other country that says, hey, you know what? Abortion is just as awful as starving people in North Korea.
Right.
So why don't we just go and bomb America for the lives of the 3,000 babies a day they murder?
Yes.
I mean, like, who sets the objective standard for the world police?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Because we're not even close to being like have the moral high ground here.
No, no, no. And that's
not
the point.
At all.
And
like, that's what's so crazy about it. It's pure. It's self-righteousness at the highest level. It's pride at the highest level. And the commander-in-chief of one of the most powerful militaries in the world is determining what's evil and what's not.
Yeah. Notwithstanding the fact that both Russia and Syria have made the complaint in the last week, they have said that Syria did not use chemical weapons. They said it was not Syria. Vladimir Putin arguing that he has proof that it was not Syria. And there's all kinds of questions surrounding that. But here's the point. There wasn't even an investigation done that could satisfy the international community to say that we found that these chemical weapons were absolutely fired from Syria and from Assad's regime. And so there wasn't even a debate. There wasn't even a fight over it. There wasn't even proof given. There were just missiles launched. And notwithstanding the fact, please listen to this carefully, that Russia has already told us that if we engage in the kind of activity that we did in the last week, that Russia would get involved with us in military conflict. Now, I have a question. Do we want to go to war with Russia? Or in the case of what took place this past week when we sent a strike force to North Korea, do we want to go to war with China? Because China committed at that point as an ally of North Korea. Now, things have changed. Things have shifted dramatically in the last 48 hours in regard to that situation. But here's the point. These decisions that we make as a nation, when we attack other sovereign states, we had better have a good reason for it. And if it's not defense, then we have to ask the question, is it righteous? And if we get engaged in a military conflict as a result of us striking first, who actually is the bad guy in that situation? Because you see, I would say this, that biblically speaking, if you look throughout the Bible and look at biblical principles as to how you engage in just warfare, this is the standard, defensive. It's a defensive posture. It's a defensive posture. Now watch, this is very, very important. Nobody's suggesting with a defensive posture of warfare and just war theory that you wait until somebody drops a bomb on your city and obliterates it before you actually respond. Mm. That's not what defensive posture means. Yes, we want to say we're attacked first and then we fight back. But you can also have somebody saying, hey, we're going to bomb you in a week. We send a missile over to you as practice, that sort of a thing. It's still defensive when you engage in that. If they haven't actually struck first, but they're telling you we're striking you in a week, it's still a defensive posture to do a preemptive strike.
What about North Korea?
They're
always saying they're going
to
kill us.
Now, that gets us to an interesting point about North Korea. Now, that's important about North Korea. North Korea is not Syria. And in North Korea's case, North Korea has practiced missile launches. They have threatened to blow us up and to send nuclear warheads to us. And so that's we'll get to that conversation. But we have to ask the question with the start, Syria. Was it right for us to send missiles over to Syria? Who's right in that conflict, in that argument? Is America right or is Russia right? Vladimir Putin, world leader, leader of Russia, popular world leader, said that we didn't have any right to do it and that it was an attack on a sovereign state and it was against international law because it was us attacking when we had not been attacked. And his argument was, of course, that chemical weapons were not used by Syria. Now, you might argue that they were, but the point is that where was the international community brought in to have it proved to them that chemical weapons were fired by Syria? And it still hasn't been done. So consider that. We launched 59 missiles over to a sovereign state when we had not been attacked. Let's continue with Dr. Bonson.
Now, that isn't to say that I disagree with with the goal of having this man driven from power. But I certainly disagree with the idea that, that our children and our money should be used to do that.
Well, what about these guys? Maybe in the way the Bible discusses this, well, these guys are our neighbors, right? We're supposed to take care of our neighbors. We're supposed to love our neighbors, right?
Wrong. That is an analogy which is inappropriate. We are to take care of our neighbors. The Bible teaches that, but it would be a grave mistake to transfer what the Bible teaches about interpersonal relations to international relations. To treat nations as neighbors with one another in the same way that your next-door neighbor and you are neighbors would be not only a monumental conceptual mistake, but it will lead to ethical mischief all over the place. It's also the truth. Husbands and wives are supposed to love each other and to have sexual relations with each other, but no one in their right mind tries to transfer that analogy to international affairs.
Oh, man.
Oh, he was a monster.
Bonson. Bonson, powerful. That's why I love Bonson so much, because he's able to take what are generally pithy kind of arguments and turn them on their head and show you that's not consistent. It just doesn't work.
Jesus told us that when we're dealing with individuals and we can avoid provocation and walk away from a fight, that we're obligated to do that. We're to turn the other cheek. He was not giving instructions for international relations when he said that. So it is true that we are to take care of our neighbors, you know, person on person, but there is no instruction in the Bible that says that we are, as a nation, obligated to expend human life, to spill human blood, to spend the money and resources of a nation to take care of the internal affairs or even the external affairs of another nation.
All right, hang on to this. Dr. Greg Bonson is here. He is a theologian who is trying to help us think about the nature of war. When is, and if it is a just cause, when is it appropriate to intervene?
All right, guys, here's some more.
Circumstances, is war justified? A brief question, Doc, before we go to our phone callers, okay?
Okay.
You were saying, well, yeah, well, all right, we can't use the rules that were given for interpersonal relationships to extend them to international relations. That's a mistake.
That's right.
All right, how about this, then? The United States signed a treaty with the United Nations, which it sort of obligates us to use the United Nations as a legitimate international force for peace. And everybody acknowledges, well, that's a noble cause. And you said earlier that peace is a noble cause.
Right.
All right. We agreed, and the United Nations voted to use force over there and to get the Iraqis out of Kuwait and authorize the United States to go to war. Our own elected representatives of the United States tacitly accepted that jurisdiction when it agreed to ratify that UN vote. Therefore, we were dealing with this issue through rule of law, through our elected representatives, for the cause of peace. That validated our jurisdiction, that put the good seal of housekeeping on our tactics. We won. We can now go right off into the sunset, patting ourselves in the back and giving a national award to Storm and Norman in the joint session of Congress.
Well, obviously, Jan, there are going to be some people that have trouble believing that anything the United Nations does is automatically morally acceptable. I find it more than just a little bit ironic that many of the socio-political conservatives in this country who have for years railed upon the United Nations for its liberalism and for its interventionism and for principles that they don't agree with are now all of a sudden willing to use appeal to the United Nations to sanction what they wanted to do in Iraq.
Now, I think that is actually a good point to talk about in terms of our current context and what took place this last week with Syria. Mm-hmm. Does anybody remember when Hillary was running for president, when she was a candidate for the presidency, how when she was had all this tough talk against Putin and Russia, she was talking about the need to go in and to deal with Assad and to do everything that needed to be done in Syria? Do you remember all the conservatives were actually chewing her out?
Yeah,
because of her being a warmonger,
right?
And we haven't been attacked. Does anybody remember even Trump's tweets since 2013, where he was criticizing Obama that if he would dare go into Syria without being provoked or without Congress's approval, then he'd be violating the law. Did you guys remember that? Anybody see those things?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just look up, guys. Just look up Trump.
Just listen to our radio shows on it.
That's right. Look up Trump's tweets on Syria since 2013. He had tough talk for President Obama, talking about the fact that you cannot go in and bomb Syria. You can't go in and have military action in Syria without Congress's approval. He says, big mistake. Big mistake. And then all of a sudden, 2 months into his presidency, we're not attacked by Syria, and Trump launches 59 missiles at a Syrian airbase, going completely contrary to what he said before he was the president. Now that's something that we need to talk about. Mm. I mean, who gets to declare war?
Congress.
Congress. You have to have Congress's approval. That is of course the United States standard, right? Isn't that what our documents say? And so if Congress gets to do that, then everyone says, "Oh, but wait, it really wasn't an act of war. I mean, it was just 59 missiles." I love the memes coming out that show like two planes going into buildings going, not an act of war, just a less specific targeted, you know, thing. Or they show, you know, Pearl Harbor, you know, that it wasn't really an official declaration of war. It's just sort of an isolated military strike. It's like, well, wait a second.
I was going to say, even the news clip you played earlier, she was like, made it clear that they were old Scud missiles.
Well, that was Korea.
Oh,
that was
funny, but still, like, it's like, oh, but they were old missiles, so it's no big deal.
They weren't like full power; they were like kind of stale.
Yeah, right.
They were expired.
So somebody said that the War Powers Act of 1973 grants him the power to do that, and I was like, well, we should just ignore all laws in 1973.
Yeah,
this is because
we got some really bad 73.
We got some really bad laws in 1973.
Now, if it was in the 80s. Jeff would defend it.
Yeah, if it was the 80s.
It was the 80s. It's the best law ever.
It was the best law.
The best
all
everything
time.
The best came from the 80s.
But it's the fact, you know, he brings up like the UN and all that. Like, that's what happens when you make stupid agreements with immoral organizations.
But do you guys remember, though, when he was debating Hillary Clinton and he goes, I want peace with Russia. I don't want to go to war with Russia. Well, and we were like, that's the best thing anybody's ever said.
Well, we talked about that, I think, on the radio program, Marcus, is we're like, not getting Hillary means, well, at least we're not going to go to war with Russia. And within 2 months, we've got Russia sending battleships towards us going, hey, if you fire again, we're going to war. And I believe it. I believe Putin means it when he said that. Like, he could have, based upon his past threats, actually attacked us back when he sent those 59 missiles this last week. But Putin showed a lot of restraint and said, okay, all right, last chance. Mm-hmm. If you do it again, military conflict, guaranteed. And so it is interesting because that's what Trump was saying. He was mocking Hillary Clinton for her position on Syria. And he was like, look, let's be friends with Russia. I don't want to go to war with Russia. It'd be great if we were friends with Russia. And I was thinking, okay, well, at least I feel a little bit of comfort having Trump as president if that's his position, because I don't want to go to war with Russia. I don't want to go to war with Russia. I don't want to see my friends die and Americans die and my children be raised in the context of World War III. Let's try not to do that.
But you know what? No one's talking about Trump colluding with the Russians anymore.
That is true.
So I think, you know,
a little bit of wagging the dog going on.
I feel like it. Yeah.
You said the 80s were the best. So let's bring on Red Dawn.
Red Dawn! Oh, I should have absolutely pulled a clip from Red Dawn this episode. Yeah,
that's a great movie.
When we as the United States intervened in Panama and the United Nations condemned that, we thumbed our nose at the United Nations and said, too bad. We believe that it was morally right and we did it. Now that we have the United Nations behind us in this particular skirmish in Iraq, then we're very happy to appeal to that as our moral justification. And so what happens here, if you're going to be honest, you see, as an ethicist, you have to look at that kind of thing and say, hasn't the United Nations become something of a taxi that we use for our convenience? When it's going the way we want it to go, then we're glad to use it. And when it goes contrary to the direction we want to go, then we openly condemn it. And so I don't believe that it's shows integrity for us to believe that United Nations is really what we think morally justifies intervention anywhere in the world. Because, as a matter of fact, we intervene and don't intervene according to our own desires and according to our own way of thinking, regardless of the United Nations. And then there's the second issue, and that is, even if we totally submitted to the United Nations every time it made a decision, does the United Nations itself carry the moral authority to authorize warfare? Does it have genuine political jurisdiction anywhere in this world? Or is it a voluntary organization whose advice can be taken or not taken and that sort of thing? I don't believe that we can use the United Nations in a way that's analogous to, say, the Congress of the United States. It's one thing for us to say we have elected officials who make a decision and they have the authority, the political authority to do that, and we submit to them. It's another thing to transfer that by analogy to the United Nations. The United Nations is not a ruling body in this country. And consequently, the appeal to the United Nations is not only, in some senses, hypocritical on our part, but even where the United Nations agrees with us, it can only agree with us, if you're going to do this from a moral standpoint, it can only agree with us and therefore give us some kind of sanction on what we're doing, if what we're doing is right.
Well, all right, let's take it from the nationalistic approach here briefly.
Okay.
He was a Hitlerist figure, threatening to lock up and control the oil wealth to which Americans and the Western industrial might depends. And the guy was unstable. He was a threat to the existence of Israel. Still is, created great acts of nastiness with the threats of chemical, biological, and nuclear capacity.
Does that sound exactly, almost like near side-by-side parallel to what is being said about Assad and Syria and those sorts of things, chemical weapons? Now, let's think for a moment now. How do you solve the problem of the constant fights happening in the Middle East because of oil? What do you think is a good way to handle the problem of oil and the Middle East and the fights that take place?
Start drilling in Alaska?
Ah! How about we actually start doing it here? How about we actually deal with our own oil supply and actually produce business and capital based upon our own oil supply? That way we're not getting involved in fights overseas over oil supply or anything to do with oil. That's one way to solve the problem. Also, the issue of Israel comes up often. And I want to say to everyone listening right now that might have particular theological beliefs about Israel, I want to say that we need to read the scriptures and believe the scriptures. And the Bible says those who are Jews are those who are descendants of Abraham. And that's what makes you a true Jew. And the only way that you are a true Jew, a descendant of Abraham, is if you have the faith of Abraham. That is to say, you have faith in Jesus Christ. I say that if you say you're a Jew and you don't believe in Jesus, you are not a Jew. Jesus says you lie. That's what Jesus says in Revelation. He says, I will make those who say they are Jews and are not, they lie. They're a synagogue of Satan. Now, it's not to say that I don't have love for the Jews and I want them to know Jesus. I do, but we should not be fighting wars and spilling American blood and pouring out American money for people that reject Jesus. And the reason we do it is we say because they're God's chosen. Nobody's God's chosen who doesn't believe in Jesus.
To bring us back to the 80s again, were you talking about the Druish?
The Druish Spaceballs! See, I got it, Spaceballs, right away. Druish.
I don't think you picked the best 80s movies, by the way.
I picked some good ones.
I don't think you did.
Oh, no. Now, well, you get them next time. You get them next time.
They'll all be horror movies.
Yeah, look, Ivy said they're pretty good.
It was in the United Nations.
You guys are a bunch of sucker MCs.
I'm sorry, in the United States' best interest to pull the plug on this jerk.
It is not the United States' right to pull the plug on this jerk until this jerk becomes a direct and immediate threat to us. That is, just war is defensive in its purposes. And when we are at the point of defending our own citizens, of course we have the right to intervene.
In an international economy, an attack on an international resource is an attack on the United States.
No, I don't believe that thinking can be accepted as cogent. Anytime somebody does something in the international economic market that is going to put a hardship on the United States, you would then be justified in going to war against that person. And, of course, from a Christian standpoint, there's no way we can justify that way of thinking. To think that because my economic well-being is going to be adversely affected by what's happening, say, in the Japanese stock market, that therefore we have the right to intervene over there.
So the short answer is we blew it?
I'm afraid that we blew it, although, you know, you talked about Storm and Norman being honored. It's one thing to say that the political administration made an immoral decision to involve us in something that I don't think God would approve for us to be involved in. It's another thing altogether to say that we don't support the troops and the men who are over there. I'm afraid that there's a lot of shallow ethical thinking on the part of those who do oppose the war that leads them to think, I have to oppose the soldiers and the men who are there. I, for one, as you can tell, don't support the political decision to be there. But I'm totally in support of the men who went over and risked their lives and I think did, you know, from a strategic standpoint, did a fantastic job. I feel.
So that, I think that's important to talk for a moment. You don't have to be a crazy war protester in saying that you want defensive war posture. You don't have to be the kind of person that attacks the troops and goes and throws things at them when they come home from the war and those sorts of things and call them baby killers and, you know, because they engaged in war in that way. You can, in fact, defend American lives that are going over there to be spent while also saying, hey, can I throw a comment in here? This is not just, we weren't attacked. We shouldn't have this as part of our procedure or what we do in terms of fighting wars. So
that seems like a pro-troop position.
Yeah.
Like, I care for our troops. I don't want them going somewhere to give their lives for something where they don't need to be going.
That's right. That's right. Because the concern is American blood and money. You're taking American money from American citizens to fight a war. And by the way, can we talk about that for just 1 second? It was over $80 million. Over $80 million for those 59 missiles that went over to the Syrian airbase. Now, I saw an estimate that said that it was about $200 million to actually engage in that. In terms of mechanical stuff that went in, the servicemen, all the stuff that had to happen to make that take place, it was about a $200 million attack. A $200 million attack. I'm sorry. I don't want to hear that we don't have the money to provide for American government needs when we're spending that kind of money on like a missile strike when we weren't even attacked. It's crazy. And let's just say it as it is. That money belonged to United States citizens.
Yeah.
We are taxed on every dollar so many times, it's a wonder that any of it is left. We're taxed on our income today, which was never a part of the American project. And when you think about how money is spent by government, you can understand why many Christians say, hey, we need to have a discussion about this. I mean, just consider the fact, when you think about the Boston Tea Party, we were throwing tea into the water over quote-unquote taxes that were like around 2%. And it was an income tax, baby. It was taxes on products and those sorts of things. So
you calling me baby?
Yeah. So we do need to talk about these things. And when you think about the level of taxation in the United States today and why it is the way that it is, well, it is the way that it is because of situations like this. Could we spend American money and tax dollars on having a really great ability to respond militarily to an attack? Yeah, we could do that. And that's an appropriate use of public money. You could do that. Now, whether it needs to be a standing army, that's another question. But could you invest in strategies and those sorts of things with American money? Yes, that's not a waste of money. But I'll tell you what I think is a waste of money is $200 million spent on 59 missiles sent to a Syrian air base when we weren't attacked. Also, did you see, tell me that you saw it, the head of the Russian military was talking about our attack on the Syrian Air Force base. They flew a Russian drone over the base right after it was attacked to show the damage that was caused. All the runways still intact. All the major stuff there still intact. We blew some holes in the ground, did very little damage. And the head of the Russian military, at least the spokesperson, said that militarily this was terrible. Like, he essentially mocked us. He's like, good job. You did nothing. They were like, they said this. They said, look, you're guilty for breaking international law and attacking a sovereign state, and you did a really terrible job at it.
Wow.
It was actually pretty powerful.
So $200 million to scare someone.
Scare them.
That's it. Just $200 million.
That's that. Yeah. Over $80 million for the missiles. And then all the other costs, they said, around $200 million.
To not do any damage.
Not to do any damage.
With it. Failed mission.
Failed mission. Yes. Failed mission. So, I mean, in this conflict, I'm trying to do this and bring some levity to all this. It looks like we are the sucker MCs. In all of this. So, all right, if this whets your appetite, we're going to put the link to the sermon audio for this discussion underneath this episode. So I'd encourage you to listen to the entire thing. We will finish it up. I do want to talk about what some of the callers say. So we'll probably spend some time in the next episode dealing with this because it's an important conversation. And with us being about 2 months into the Trump presidency, I'm sure it'd be good for us to have a solid biblical position set down on this. It'd be good for us to talk about it and know what we believe and what's consistent with the scriptures. We just wanted to give you a little touch on it today and play a lot of the beginning of this conversation. We'll have a little more interaction next week. Luke the Bear.
Peace out.
Ivy Connerly.
Sayonara.
What? Enjoy the girl.
See ya.
Marcus King Ginger.
Hey, can we say real quick what we're doing Tuesday?
Yes.
Because it's for an abortion now. When this episode will come out, it already will already be done.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we're going to film Ray Comfort
eating lunch.
No, we're gonna sit down and have an interview with him.
Oh, we're gonna actually interview him.
Yeah, we're gonna have an interview with
eating
him.
Lunch with Ray,
and then we're gonna play the interview at the An Abortion Now conference.
Excellent. Pray for us, guys. All Lots right. of big things happening. Don't forget to go to endabortionnow.com. Get signed up with your church, guys. Join with us. We just had somebody visit us from Las Vegas just yesterday or the day before last in the studio. Yeah. Got involved in the work because of Apologia Church. Saved 2 babies this week. Praise God.
Sir.
It's all worth it. So you should get involved, too. Endabortionnow.com is where you go. Don't forget to sign up. Get involved, and don't forget to click on the link that connects you to your local legislators. Let them know you will stand behind them if they criminalize abortion in your state. Keep your eyes out for next week with Jeff Durbin. It's coming soon on Facebook Live, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live every week on Tuesday. Catch you guys next week. What's up, y'all? This is Jeff Durbin with Apologia Radio at apologiaradio.com. Want to talk to you guys about an amazing connection that we have right now with Whitfield Theological Seminary. I want you to run over to whitfield.edu, whitfield.edu, whitefield.edu. I want you to check out the programs they have. They have undergraduate programs at Whitfield College, and they also have Whitfield Theological Seminary for the graduate degree and above and beyond. I think you'll really be impressed with the rigorous nature of the classes, the consistent biblical worldview taught and adhered to. I want you to contact Whitfield Theological Seminary at whitfield.edu. Get a hold of our friend, Dr. Kenneth Talbot, and start your classes today. ApologiaRadio.com.